So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you on Wrestling Weekly. Les?
Yes?
I think Mikey Whipwreck thinks that we're hardcore homecoming.
He stood them up and he stood us up too, huh?
Yes, he did. Mikey Whipwreck is not answering his phone. And I kind of had a feeling that this might happen because he hasn't answered his phone all day.
But we do have one of our guests that was scheduled.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
The Hot Topic panelist from The Torch, Bruce Mitchell, is joining us right now live on Wrestling Weekly. Bruce, thanks for being here.
Well, I'm sorry that I missed you guys a few minutes ago. It was just completely my ineptness. I want to apologize for that.
I want to give you 10,000 words on his ineptness. Now, I'm going to spill the beans here, Doc, because I know why Bruce was, he didn't hear the phone for one reason. It's the first of the month. And
that hurt.
That's a little too truthful. I don't even know what I did. I get over anyway. And what he's doing is putting the final stamps on his newsletter. Because what you don't know, and most of the general public doesn't know, he's president of the Johnny Fairplay fan club.
Really?
that's really.
This is what happens when you don't make it the first time.
Yeah, I understand that. And you know, though, it is sort of an honor to have, Les Thatcher say, even pick on me like that, because I grew up watching Les Thatcher, and I'll never forget the Big Brother tag team feud that he was involved in, George and Sandy Scott versus Les and Margaret Thatcher. I mean, who could ever forget that? Over here?
Oh, wow.
All right. Now I feel at home, Bruce.
Well, the classic feud.
Doc, honestly, the truth is Bruce is the person who got Johnny Fairplay involved in wrestling.
Really?
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Yes.
Oh, God.
You got to tell us this, Bruce.
Johnny Fairplay was this guy who, a friend of, when you had the pay-per-views, when you watch pay-per-views, you have people over. And so the word got out that come over to my apartment and see the pay-per-views or whatever it was, or go to there was a bar that used to sponsor, and we'd go there too. And so somehow John Dalton, Johnny Fairplay got hooked up in this. This was long before Survivor, and we all called him Crazy Johnny because he was crazy as hell. I mean, this guy would come over and start bragging about his women, start bragging about everything under the sun, and we just thought he was a kook. And then a couple years later, he got into indie wrestling around here and started managing. And I had to warn him. I remember one time very specifically, he sold wrestling dolls at the indie shows. No one knows this part. And I had to warn him very specifically that Manny Fernandez and Rick Link were coming over to bust up his tables. And he, got out of Dodge really fast because they didn't like him. The story that I could tell, and this is an exclusive story and probably a pretty bad story, but you remember Chris Cruz?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right, the WCW announcer. Well, he was out of wrestling, but he lived in the area, so he would come over here and watch the pay-per-views. And he didn't particularly care for our friend Johnny either. And so one day Johnny comes in. He brings some Coronas with him. So he brings his Coronas, puts them in the refrigerator, watching the pay-per-view, running off at the mouth. Everybody's kind of annoyed at him. And then he decides he has to go. I don't know if he had to go smoke a cigarette or whatever it was. He went or had an errand to run, so he left the apartment and went and got something. And Mr. Cruz added something to his Corona. Screw the bottle top, then screwed it back. And,
something all natural?
Something all natural that the color matched the color of the Corona.
Okay.
Oh,
and
God.
I'm like, and you know, I know ribs and all that. I'm not in business, all that stuff. But, I mean, I'm like sitting there going, okay, what do I do? And then,
right.
And I know Johnny is asking for it. I mean, you know, God, I mean, there's no two ways about it. And I will say this, I've always gotten along with him. I mean, I think because he always thought mistakenly that I could, you know, that I had some sort of end that could get him in the wrestling business or something or something or another. So, and believe me, mistakenly. And so he comes in, he comes back, blah, 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 blah. He goes to the refrigerator, reaches for the door, and I'm sorry to say that I did tell him. So I did save him from that particular little rib.
And that's how you got to be president of the fan club.
Yeah, I got to be president of the fan club. So little did I know, I mean, you know, first he almost killed Roddy Piper, as the story goes, and then you know, became friends with Roddy Piper, which was strange enough, and then the whole Survivor thing. And the guy, I give him credit, he has stretched his 15 minutes and made more money with no talent than I think anybody. I watched the Ultimate Warrior DVD this weekend, and I think he did better than the Ultimate Warrior. he's an amazing guy in certain ways. And when he was on Survivor, you know, I'm a school teacher in my real life, and the women that I worked with knew it, and they didn't like me all the time because I was friends with Johnny. How could he lie about his grandmother like that? And look, it's just a game, you know. Yes, he was like that when he lived in Greensboro. So.
That's good. You think we'll see him back in TNA anytime soon?
Yes, we will. He's supposed to host the syndicated show.
Ah.
I believe it's called TNA Explosion. So, I mean, there's a strong group of people in TNA who don't want him anywhere near anything.
Right.
And then Dixie Carter believes that he still has some, you know, recognizability as a celebrity, so they want to, you know, so that was kind of the compromise was, I think the idea is to keep him off the Impact show, but put him on Explosion where he does do a lot of little media appearances and stuff, so then he would, you know, then he would plug Impact and plug TNA, but they'd keep him out of their hair, because, I mean, right down the line, they don't, I mean, from Jeff Jarrett to Mike Tenay to pretty much everybody, that the booking committee and all the rest of them, they're not, they either don't think he's very talented, or they don't like him personally, or whatever it is, which, I mean, he's got no problem making somebody feel that way about him. He thinks it's his character.
He's got more heat in the dressing room than he's got out in front of the people.
Exactly. So, I mean, so to keep Dixie happy, they're doing that, and to keep, you know, keep everybody else in the whole company happy, they're, you know, keeping him away from the Impact show. So that's
you know who he should manage? Evan Courageous.
Evan Courageous.
Evan was great at getting heat in the dressing room.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I'll tell you one of the funniest lines, Chronic, when he was here with me, when I had the WWE contract, and one day Kevin Kelly and I decided we're going to put everybody's name in a hat, and whoever name you drew, we were doing promo practice, right? So you had to do whoever's name you drew out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the coolest ones that I'll ever forget was Haku did the Alvinas. but he really put his heart into it. It was really cool. So
right.
Anyway,
I never saw Haku do it. Wow.
Yeah.
I never saw him do a promo.
Yeah. Oh, hey, what a great guy he is. I mean, you know, he'd kill you with one finger.
Right.
But he's a sweetheart. He's a sweetheart of a guy. I love him to death. Anyway, so Chronic pulls Courageous out, and he comes out to Kelly, and he's I got Evan Courageous here, and Evan, you know, if you're promo, and Evan said, well, what are you into these days? So I'm like, well, Kevin, first of all, can I plug my book I got coming out? And Kevin said, well, sure, Evan. What's the title of your book? He said, well, it's called How to Get Heat in the Dressing Room. And the whole building just cracked up. Because he was. I mean, I tell you what, he wasn't in the camp. Well, we'll ask Shannon when he comes on. We've got Shannon Moore coming on later. Shannon, it was Shannon's partner, but Shannon distanced himself from
it. Right.
Oh, man.
But they would make a pair, I think. Courageous and Johnny Fairplay. They would be cool. What's tomorrow's the bit? You watched TNA last night,
right?
Okay, and then tomorrow is the all Doc can talk about is the bra and panties match.
Oh yeah. You know, Doc, they actually have these videos that you can rent and buy. But, that might be another show. But, that might be another type of show that you should market and do besides this one.
I mark out for one bra and panties match, and I'll never get over it now.
You know what, Bruce? I honestly thought of you last Monday night when the little girl's, Candace Michelle, is that her name?
Right.
Yeah.
They stripped down. When she did, she cut a better serious promo than half the guys, as she said.
And yes, she
I'm
did.
I'm challenging you to a handicap bra and panties. I just went to pieces. I thought, man, that was the funniest thing ever.
What I liked was she still had her bra on, and yet the two women were like, they had their hands all over her breast trying to not show, even though she still had her bra on. I'm just like, okay, wait a minute.
Her panties aren't any more brief than Tori's shorts, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
What'd you think about Impact last night?
I thought production values were good, and they accomplished what they needed to do, which was look different than WWE. And there were parts of it that I really did like, but I know we talked off the air about this, but I concur with Les that it's still a little too fast. I mean, they've got a lot to get over, but they've got to remember that they've got 1 hour and not 2 hours, and they don't want to go too fast for people. And I think they kind of did that. I know they want to focus. Like this week was Monty Brown. I think next week is AJ and then Christopher Daniels. The following week, and ending up with Samoa Joe, who apparently had a tremendous match with Kenny Kobashi last night.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Honor.
But they wanted to introduce these guys to a whole new audience, but they really do need to maybe pick a focus and focus on it even more. But I understand why they thought we got to go bang 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 to get some attention. But sometimes you can go be too much bang.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I prefer. And we got to be sure that everybody gets in their dive through the ropes or over the ropes.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, they tried to introduce the X Division, so they had two of those matches where it just, everybody got their moves in, and three guys got to do everything in the world, and to the point where you're kind of, which one is the one I'm supposed to think about when this is over.
Yeah, like Les said earlier in the show, I don't think that last night's show was the barometer for what it's going to be like, because it was the first show, and they are trying to get everything out there and show you a little bit of everything they have. But I think it's the next few weeks that are going to be very important.
Let me ask you, I was talking to Doc before we went on the air tonight, but I have surround sound on our entertainment center, and but I could barely hear Tene and West. I mean, there wasn't good separation between the audio and just the general soundtrack.
Yeah, you, there may be something to that. I mean, it was pretty much there was sound all the time. You know, just kind of too much. But I mean,
a wall of sound.
Wall of sound. Yeah, that. And sometimes I notice that with WWE too. It seems like there's just I know that there were some production things that they weren't all that happy with, but they knew they could fix. I mean, I know during the taping, they thought there were some things they needed to fix, but maybe that was one of them. So hopefully they'll hopefully those little things that they'll smooth out a little bit. But it's not like they haven't been taping TV all this time; it's just no one's seen it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I do think they look different enough. I think people are really starved for an alternative, and I think they did get that across that they are different enough and not an imitation of WWE, but still pro wrestling. That I think there's a place for a real scrappy underdog, and they could take that place if they're going to have to be in the next two, three, 4 months if they could do that.
Have you heard any overnight numbers yet on that?
No, I haven't. That's a good question. I don't know when the overnights will come out on Saturday night.
I don't either.
Probably on Monday.
Yeah. So that I know that they did. They did those point threes on .03s on Friday afternoons, and I know they're looking to beat Velocity, so we'll see.
Which show last week, Doc? I'm a big Bruce Mitchell mark, and I always read his through the Torch. If you're a VIP member, you get this instant feedback from the Torch staff. And which was it? Which show was it last week? Most of you guys scored a 2 or 2.5 or a 3.
I think pretty down on SmackDown lately.
Yeah, that was SmackDown.
And it was really frustrating to sit. And it's one of those things where I'm just like, a main event heel should be taken seriously. When you've got Eddie Guerrero, who's as talented of a guy as you'll ever see, and you know, and he does participate in whatever they have him doing. But when he's being, when he's getting his prostate probed by Dr. Barnett, and he's the guy you got to sell tickets for your main, you know, your main event match. That drives me crazy. I mean, that's just, they really, you know, I've got no problem with wrestling turning into comedy. I swear I've got no problem if they take the ring ropes down and take the mats out and have a comedy show, if that comedy show is funny. If I'm laughing during that comedy show, but when it's a bad wrestling show and a bad comedy show on top of it, that's really hard to take.
Right.
Particularly when it's wasting some talent.
Don't you find some of the humor sophomoric as hell?
And I also just think it misses, too. It's like they see something in a movie and, you know, oh, it was funny when that girl had that growth on her face. So in the movie, but the movie had a whole story around it and, you know, different things that happened with it. And then they just put it out there and go, it must be funny in a wrestling ring. Well, it's not, because you just, I don't know. The Jillian Hall thing just makes my skin crawl. I don't know. Maybe that's, you know.
That whole facial thing is just, it's just totally stupid.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, although, you know, if you made a really good comedy show, I think it'd be pretty tough to sell tickets to your pay-per-view show, which I always thought was the point of, you know, the wrestling TV is to drive people to buy tickets. So.
Well, maybe they can have a promotion where if you win, you get to touch it.
Or maybe not. No thanks.
Audience interaction.
Yeah, like I said, skin crawling. No thanks.
You know what? We got two good heel tag teams now. I think Murdoch and Cade can be. You know, I mean, they're.
I like them. I agree with.
Yeah,
that.
Me too. And Eminem is very good. Milena knows how to work the corner like a girl should. Between her and Charmel, all the valets could take lessons from the two of them.
You know what, Les? I think you know this anyway, but not to be a mutual admiration tonight, but I agree with that so much. I mean, those two are head and shoulders above. You know, they fit into what they're doing. I mean, they know when to not do something. They know when to do it. Milena and Eminem it's one of those teams where they all fit together. They all have their role, and it definitely makes sense. I really enjoy them, and I'm glad, and I'm hoping that they get them away from the Road Warriors. I mean, from the new LOD.
Well, you know, they're smart enough to give the new LOD squashes, but at some point that becomes mute too, and they've got to put some time in.
Yeah.
But with Eminem on one TV and Caden and Murdoch on the other is a good place to start a tag team division again. I was telling Doc earlier, I think everybody's talking about the X division, and I think Samoa Joe's honestly going to be the hot singles. I can see him and Monty Brown a year and a half, 2 years down the road really kicking some butt. But I think that that Bubba and Devon and America's Most Wanted are going to create some commotion simply because people are starved to see good tag teams.
Hmm.
And you know, there's that thing about you want to fill the void if the big dog, if WWE is missing something, and they traditionally have never had tag teams back to, you know, I guess the only time they really were driven by tag teams was Roken Perez back in the 60s. So, that's not what the McMahons promote, and not that they're wrong because they've been very successful, but that leaves an opening for TNA. And then, you know, one of the things I do think, they had that bad rating, that 3.2 Monday night on Raw, and Wade Keller and I kind of talked about this the other day on the Torch thing, that the undercard kind of is missing something, and you know, and one of the things that's missing is that, you know, tag teams could really help out. I mean, that really, you know, that really could fill that void.
Sure.
Being stronger than that, but I like Trevor Murdoch. I think that he's different enough, and he's he does a very good Dick Murdoch, which God knows that guy was great.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, the facial expressions, and then just being a different type body that the rest of the bodies can contrast.
Right.
Right.
And I see Lance is very comfortable now too, much more so than he was.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, here's a kid. When he came to me, I started him as Babyface, but he wasn't really comfortable. Then I made him a heel and put him with Steve Bradley. But anyway, he really developed his personality and started to get comfortable with himself. But I know the first time up, I didn't see that so much, in him. But this time, I think he's finally hit his stride, and they're going to be a good, strong team.
Yeah, they complement each other too.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I'm kind of glad that I wonder whether they're trying to redo their tag teams or not, and starting with putting the belts on those guys and going that way. But
you know,
I don't know. I don't know that they'll ever. I just don't expect WWE to ever stick with that. They never seem to. They try.
You know, I thought when Vince bought WCW, I was finally going to see a complete pay-per-view, because back during the Monday Night Wars, when I bought the WWF, I expected to see a strong upper card and a weak lower card. In WCW, I expected to see the tags and the cruisers kick butt, and expected to see bad main events because of the older guys who weren't mobile. You know, and then I'm thinking, okay, now I'm going to see it all. That's the one thing, you know, I don't think anybody ever gave Kevin Sullivan credit for either, is at one point he had virtually a cornucopia of professional wrestling. He had, you know, the garbage matches, he had luchadors, he had cruiserweights, he had heavyweights. He gave you virtually, you know, it wasn't all great, you know, in terms of depth of talent, but, you know, he was trying to give the general public something for everybody to hang on to his show with.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the one thing about it, too, he had that they really did a good job was they took the new styles. I mean, they took the styles that the majority of the public hadn't seen and got them out there, and they were really fresh. You're right. I mean, that undercard there for a couple of years was really strong with you had new guys all the time that were the epitome of the new styles that you named. So I mean, nothing's new right now, but it can all go back again.
Yeah. Well, I think if worst case scenario, TNA, if their numbers are good, are going to force WWE to quit letting the writers learn on the job. They're going to have to learn before they get on the job. And,
right.
You know, one of the things that I see, and I've read a couple of different places that other people have picked it up, is the repetitive nature of some of the places. Like, you know, it's Bruce Mitchell against Les Thatcher, then Doc Young runs in, then somebody else runs in, then the general manager comes out and turns it into a tag.
Yeah.
It's like it's done on every show. You know, or the way the last two pay-per-views, the way Cena's gone in and had to go into a handicap match, and which makes no sense anyway.
Mm.
Yeah,
you know,
and one of the problems with, I think Cena is who they should be, you know, pushing the way they're doing it. But I think it's a really tough situation to try to follow the same storyline that one of the phenomenons ever, Stone Cold Steve Austin, did.
Yeah,
you know, and not, you know, with the fresh Mr. McMahon character that we'll never see again, and you know.
And you know, the one thing they can't possibly sense is the chemistry. You know, two guys. I don't care who, you know. It can be a great storyline, but if the two guys doing it don't have the chemistry, it's not going to work either.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you a great example of that. You know, we had Mick on last week, but when he and Rock did their improv thing the one night, and where the numbers jumped in that quarter hour so greatly, then the company and their infinite wisdom came back a few months later and said, well, that was so good, we'll reprise it. Well, they didn't reprise it because it was a chemistry thing.
Yeah, it sure was. It was the first time for it, and you know, everything just kind of. I will say this: I was there in the building that night. I actually was here.
Yeah.
And it bombed. I thought it bombed in the building. I was so shocked when I got home and got that rating. I was just like, "Boy, this is going on and on and on and on." And that was definitely one I was way wrong on. But yeah,
from reading Terry's interview chapter in his book, Terry Funk's, and stuff, and talking about, you know. But I think that's the thing that's missing, too, is the chemistry thing. For Mario Savoldi, back this past winter, myself, Honky Tonk, Nick Bockwinkel, George Steele, and Jim Duggan, we told road stories and had a panel thing, and they played their did a DVD package with of old matches of Jeff Jarrett when he was a baby and Steve Austin and Foley, you know, some of that old stuff. And at one point, they had a camera go down. They were running with three, and they were down to two, and we were just playing off each other. They give us a subject, told us where they want us to go, and we just start playing off of one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw the camera go down, so all of us had been through this before, so we're compensating, but the crew couldn't. Cut, cut. And we're, so we got to fix that camera. And they said, well, you guys take that from the top. And we all take what from the top? There was no top. We couldn't go back and do what we just did because we don't know what we did.
Right.
But we found a groove, and you know, like George play off of Nick, then I'd play off of George, and, you know, and so forth and so on, you know. And it was just a bunch of guys kibitzing, but, you know, turning it into something that was halfway entertaining. And that's what's missing today. Bless his heart, they won't let Randy Orton get a personality.
Oh, right. he is really, I mean, I think he's suffering right now. I really think that he's just treading water really fast, and it's about to go over his head. I mean, I know.
Well, you know, the sad thing is he's a flippant young guy. I mean, he's got a flippant personality if you let him play it.
Yeah, I mean, I very much, you know, agree with you, Les, about, I mean, I'm one of those ones that thinks as the wrestling in the ring has gotten better, that we get more of it, we get more of it for free, there's certain parts that are terrible, but there always were, you know, there always
sure.
were those things that weren't that good, and then the things that mediocre, but we really do get a lot for the product. But the one thing that has not advanced is the art of the promo, and I agree with you about what Terry Funk wrote in his book about the art of the promo, but when you go back, and I collect the tapes and all that, and I collect the older tapes, and a lot of it's for the promos, because I just think you guys were able to just work over and over again on your own personalities and use the things that you knew how to do to the point where there's really just such an art to it. And now you have people writing out those lines, and one guy's lines sound like another guy's lines, and that's, you know, they just don't have enough character depth. They don't have enough to it. And instead of just being really comfortable with what you're saying, and knowing which parts, you know, for your own character to get over. I mean,
sure.
you just see it. I mean, I'd take an Ole Anderson interview over pretty much anybody that does them right now. And that's, you know, there's just people that really, you know, Dusty Rhodes and just all those Southern preachers that could really talk.
If somebody had a scripted Stone Cold, there wouldn't have been a Stone Cold.
Yeah, it would have been too generic. That's right.
Yes.
I mean, that's just that passion that comes from you know, knowing yourself and going to it. I mean, I'm for them writing scripts for the people that need it. I'm for them giving talking points for the people who need
sure.
that. And I'm also for them getting the hell out of the way of the people that, you know, I think they ought to do what works, but I mean, you know, not strangling off the people that can really talk. And I bet they'd find, you know, I bet they could find some easier things on, you know, on themselves. But
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You know,
well, and you know, hopefully Bruce is this war, if that's what we're going to call it, will force them into actually getting more serious, because Vince doesn't want to suck high and tit with anybody. That's obvious. I mean, you know, he's got that great competitive nature, which is why he is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the best thing that happened is that TNA, you know, really starts popping, and so then they got to stop, you know, pitching.
Yeah, I think them and UFC kind of pushing in different directions could really help. I mean, and that is the one thing, is when he had the big competition, he did get more disciplined.
Yeah.
And, you know, really started trying to get people, you know, instead of paying so much, you know, trying to fight off these grudges that he has and politics that they deal with, they kind of put that aside and started really made their competition the grudge, and
yeah.
that helped a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, it should be interesting, and God, I hope I can stay awake through 3 hours.
Oh God, I mean, I'm gonna be real tired by the end of that night.
I watched some of the UFC stuff last night. And quite frankly, this particular whatever season it was they were showing that was really flowed better than what I saw at the beginning. on the first one, I thought.
Yeah, the one this week had a very good fight at the end of it too. I think they kind of helped, and you know they can manipulate it, but they still have some parts of it they can't manipulate.
Right.
That can go back if they catch lightning in a bottle, then they can really go to it. So I think that could help as far as keeping some of the storylines a little bit, at least the storylines on top, a little bit more serious. And,
yeah.
And that's something I think they need. I mean, you can have all the comedy in the world, but you've got to really make people believe that they're going to see a fight with some consequence on top, and to sell those tickets. And sell
absolutely.
Those tickets, so.
Absolutely.
Bruce, we've enjoyed having you on.
Well, I definitely enjoyed it, and I'm not feeling guilty like I did when I missed the phone.
Well, yes, when you go to get to school tomorrow before class, put yourself in the corner for 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate that thing about the first of the month, Wes. You have no idea how true that is. In fact, if you could send me some cash, I was going to talk to you about this off the air.
I've worked at territory too many years.
Oh, damn. Oh, well.
Bruce, we'll see you again next week for Hot Topic.
All right, I appreciate it.
Bruce, take care of yourself.
You too.
Thank you, Bruce. Bye-bye. All right, that's Bruce Mitchell from the Pro Wrestling Torch here on Wrestling Weekly. You can check that out at www.pwtorch.com. We've got Shannon Moore coming up next on Wrestling Weekly. I'm excited. Are you excited, Les?
I'm excited. I haven't talked to Shannon in a while. He's one of my boys. Like Shannon.
Yes. All right, friend of friends, we'll be back after this.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Doc Young and Les Thatcher, back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. We've got our featured guest on the line from WWE, formerly of WWE, Shannon Moore is on the line. Shannon, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And formerly of WCW, formerly of HWA.
Of course.
Yes, he's well-traveled. He's a young man, but he's a veteran in years.
Yes.
The good old days.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it, 10 years, Shannon?
Or 11.
11 years.
And how old were you when you started on the Hardy's Trampoline Federation?
Oh, man, I was 8, 9 years old then.
Wow.
Trampoline, yeah. Yeah.
What kind of guys did you watch growing up?
I don't know. I was a big, obviously like Hogan, Shawn Michaels and Rock and Roll Express. They were, some of my favorites. And I always liked Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
He was a big freak. Yeah, just basically just your basic super, Ultimate Warrior. He was one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's turned into a big riot these days, whatever. I just read that interview, Warriors interview on the internet, and I watched part of the, self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was pretty interesting.
Was that a good DVD? I didn't get to see that yet.
Yeah, I watched most of it, actually, last night, and it was pretty good. It's sad in a way, especially being an Ultimate Warrior fan, seeing the whole behind-the-scenes part of it, seeing what happened to him, and as far as just the bad business decisions and just how, they had their differences and stuff. It's just kind of sad watching it, actually.
Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit earlier, and I said, a lot of the old-timers used to say about young guys who get full of themselves, the kid's reading his own press clippings, but I think that's what's happened with the Warrior. I think
he
started becoming a character, started believing his press.
Right. I mean, I don't really blame him in a way. I mean, it's good to believe in yourself as much as he does. I wish I could believe in myself that much. But he's all about the Warrior, man.
Now, listen, you got all kinds of talent. Doc,
yeah.
Shannon, when he was here with me, wrote his own entrance music. He does music.
Really?
His wife's down, and she sings country. I've got one of her CDs here. He, you've seen the sleeve and the extra tattoos he's added since he was up in WWE. Well, he's studying to be a tattoo artist. I guess you're still doing that, aren't you?
Yeah, just here and there. I ain't really been able to focus a lot of time into it, but I've still got all my machines and stuff. And I've got a few tats here and there for, some of my friends and stuff. But it's something that I'd like to do later on, just, maybe after wrestling or you know, just once I get more time one day, that's something I'd like to, you know, pursue more.
Plus, he's pretty good at putting expensive automobiles in ditches and running into other cars.
Yeah, trying to make it back to the show, Les. Trying to make it back to the show. Yeah, that was a good story. I went home for, you know, one day or whatever, and I told Les I'd be back. I'm going to be back for a show, and I left early one morning, and I was coming back to Cincinnati from North Carolina, and it had ice on the road that morning, and I hit some black ice and ended up wrecking my car.
Ouch.
And I still made it to the show, though.
Tell him what kind of car you were driving at the time.
I had a Jack Roush Mustang. It was just a special edition Mustang that
my
pride and joy, and I put in the ditch.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Not good, but you did make it to the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He was a hard worker. I got no complaints about Shannon.
That was a good time. I look back, like HWA, like at first whenever I was there, just being that, you know, I had everything at home and I was paying for my house and everything there, and then having expenses in Cincinnati, it was kind of rough at the beginning. It was just hard to get adjusted just as far as the lifestyle goes. But, you know, I look back now, and, like, that was one of my best years of my life, like, being in Cincinnati, just all the good people that I met. And it's the year that, like, I would say that I really learned how to wrestle, too. As far as Les goes, like, he taught me a lot. And just being in the ring just day after day after day, that's what did it. That's what woke me up. And actually, you know, as far as psychology goes and as far as just, you know, doing the right things in the matches or whatever, like that was the year that I think that I improved the most and, you know, in some sort of way got it, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, I think so. I saw a big change. And he did. He, you know, and the sad thing was then when you went up, you really didn't get a chance to cut loose up there and get any quality time in, and when I say, you know, I'll say it, you never got it, you know, got a chance to really show what you had up there.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, just being up there, whatever, I pretty much, from the get-go, it was just, I was put with a lot of the bigger guys, and just as far as making people look good, I think, like, I kind of worked myself into that position. Like, you know, I feel like that they could depend on me to go out there and whether it was a Nathan Jones or, you know, like a bigger guy, you know, like a Matt Morgan or somebody like that, I feel like, you know, they would always call on me to make certain people look good because they knew that I'd bump for them. They knew I could come up with creative ways to get them over, you know, get the bigger guys over. And I feel like I kind of worked my way into that position to where that was the only thing that I was going to do. So that's my main objective now is, like, you know, personality-wise, you know, like, especially the whole Prince of Punk thing, I want to get that over as a personality. I want the people to really know what the Prince of Punk's all about as far as, you know, whether it's on the mic or whatever, because, like, I've been cutting a lot of promos and stuff, too, at some of these indie shows, and I feel real comfortable on the mic now. You know, that's one of the things we worked on in Cincinnati, too, that actually I broke my shell on, too, was, you know, the way we worked on our interviews there or whatever, it kind of opened me up, and as far as, you know, talking and stuff, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't as shy, you know, after I left there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as talking goes.
He never could project as good as his tag team partner. We were talking about Evan earlier.
Oh, my God. I don't even want to get started. I don't remember about Evan's him getting his cornrow ripped out. That's whenever I went to Les and told him I needed a change.
It was funny, Doc, because we did, you know, at the time they were doing a WCW invasion, so we did one down at our level where Shane McMahon was sending these guys from WCW in to take over HWA because it was, you know, a developmental territory.
Right.
And to cut it off at the legs, so to speak. And so everybody that came in, Shannon, Evan, Lashler, everybody, you know, Mike Sanders, they were all, you know, the bad guy. They were all the heels.
Mm.
And so Evan got heat with everybody, I guess, in the first 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks he was there. And Shannon came in one morning and sat down, and he said, "Can I ask you something?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Man," he said, "I don't want to get all this heat to my partners." And he said, "Could I be the first WCW guy to defect and come over to the HWA?
Yeah, I was ready to jump ship, man. This is the way I seen it, man. It was a no-winning battle for me because it was like him. He had all his heat or whatever, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, well, I'm trying to get out of developmental anyway. I don't want to be here forever. I got a house at home and everything, and I'm going, so I got one or two things. If Evan gets fired, I'm his tag team partner. There's a good chance I'm probably going to get fired, too. I had to go to Les and just try to come to some sort of conclusion on that.
What'd you tell him, Les?
Huh? Oh, we got it. Well, you know, I thought, as far as I was concerned, I knew, you know, he wasn't, Evan was Evan and Shannon was Shannon.
Les already knew the deal, whatever, and Les, he finally took care of it.
I told him earlier, I was telling him earlier about Brian Adams when he was doing Evan's promo and talked about his book. Remember that?
Yeah.
How to get heat in the dressing room.
Yeah, how to get heat, yeah. That's pretty funny.
You're speaking with Shannon Moore here on Wrestling Weekly. Shannon, you grew up with the Hardy Boys, right?
Yes, sir. We pretty much, yeah, just, we grew up together, man. I moved to Cameron, North Carolina whenever I was probably, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. And that's whenever, you know, I ran into Matt and Jeff at actually one of our buddies' house. They would come over there to watch wrestling pay-per-views. It was one of our friends, Billy Hall. And they were the only ones that had satellite. Billy was. So we'd all go there and watch the pay-per-views or whatever, and that's where we kind of, you know, became friends. And then, you know, throughout school, whatever, I was in, I guess I was in 5th grade and Jeff was in 8th grade. So we started hanging out, and it was like, you know, it's kind of cool because, you know, Jeff, he was the 8th grader, and, you know, he'd talk to me and stuff, because so, very many 8th graders that really hang out with the 5th graders, you know.
Mm.
I just think the way things work. But, you know, we started from that point just, you know, from watching pay-per-views to hanging out, and then we just realized that, you know, we had something there, whatever, you know, we became really good friends, and then we hit the indie scene, man. Once we, after we did the trampoline wrestling for a while, we started doing our own shows, which was NFWA, and that was New Frontier Wrestling Alliance, and we started doing that, and then we turned that into Omega, which we built pretty good, and, you know, by the end of Omega, like, the crowds we were drawing was really good, because we had so many good, talented people there. And, you know, 9 or 10 of our guys from Omega, they ended up going on to, you know, work with the top 3 companies, whether it was ECW or WCW or WWE.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had people, you know, we had Joey Matthews, Christian York, Steve Carino was with us, you know, Lodi, Joey Abs, which was a WWE at one time.
Right.
Me and Matt, Jeff, Hurricane, Mike Maverick, which was, you know, one of the Dupps in ECW, and he was in WWE. So, you know, we had 10 good people that actually went on from Omega to, you know, portray something bigger in one of the 3 companies. And, you know, so as far as Omega goes, we felt like that was pretty successful, you know. And there's still tapes and stuff out there, whatever, that's traded all the time, like Omega tapes of us back in the day. And for the time on the indie scene or whatever, it was something different, I think,
mm-hmm.
especially in our area because, you know, we had more of a high-flying, you know, style wrestling, and it was such a different style that we had, and it kind of stuck out, you know, amongst the indies.
Could you tell us about the School of Punk training? What's that all about?
It's a little wrestling school. I'm getting ready to start up. I looked at a building last week. I've got my ring. I got about 4 or 5 students right now that I'm training at home in my hometown, and I'm just looking for the right building right now. And I've always wanted, you know, a facility to train in, you know, like something. I'd love to have something like HWA had that building, but I don't know if it'll be that big or not. But, you know, I've always wanted somewhere where I can go, you know, just for me or whether it's Matt or Jeff, just if we want to go train, we can go and have a nice training facility. So, you know, I'm going to train a few people here and there, and, you know, that's pretty much it. It's
it's nothing major. It's just going to be like you and some friends and a few selected students,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, if people want to come and be trained, I mean, you know, we'll train them or whatever because, you know, I'm sure Matt and or Jeff or whoever, they'll be popping in and out of there, and, you know, I'll be there training, and if I'm on the road, I'll have somebody in there, you know, pretty much all the time, you know, working out with, especially, you know, the people that's paying to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there'll always be somebody there training them, and, you know, I'll be in there at least 2 days a week, so it's going to, you know, I plan on it being a pretty nice thing.
Hey, you know what, Shannon, if November 18th, 19th, and 20th, that's when I started, before we came on air, we're going to do a 3-day camp in Spindale. We're going to have 2 rings set up. There's going to be Dr. Tom and Tully Blanchard, myself.
Uh-huh.
And they're running a show that Friday night, and I think Matt, the promoter, is going to give you a call about maybe working the show, but I just say, bring your kids and come up.
Yeah, if I'm not booked on them days, I'll...
Or if you're booked on that show that night, come up, you know, that morning and bring the kids and work out with us that day.
Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. Have a great time.
We're going to get to some questions in the chat room in just a moment, but I wanted to ask you another question about three count. And you don't need to explain three count, but how did you enjoy your time there doing that gimmick? That was probably your most famous one.
Three count was fun, man. I enjoyed it, you know. Like, especially, you know, I was 19, and then, you know, signing with WCW was at 19 was just, like, it was just unbelievable to me. Like, I was so excited about that. But once, it was actually Jimmy Hart's idea. He, you know, he was the brains. He come up with the whole three count, personalities, whatever, because it was the time of the boy band, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
You had, you know, the Backstreet Boys, you had Britney Spears, and Jimmy just had this vision of, you know, us three being this actual boy band in wrestling, and actually, you know, do tours to, you know, whether it was concerts at malls or, you know, whatever it may be, that's what Jimmy was wanting us to do, and, It never got taken to the next level, and actually it ended up turning into more of a heel type thing, or whatever. Because there was times whenever we'd be at house shows and people would be just bombarding us with like M&Ms and just drinks and everything else. We'd have to hold the green circles up just to keep from getting hit in the face and stuff from stuff that was being thrown in the ring. And I remember one time, I think it might have been Memphis, that we was doing a house show and. That was happening or whatever, because we went out and we'd sung like, you know, three times during the show, and finally, like the fourth time we'd went out, you know, the people were throwing stuff in the ring at us, or whatever, just wanted us to die, and they sent Sid Vicious out or whatever, and they didn't play his music, and he just kind of slowly walked down to the ring, and the people started going nuts, and then, you know, on the mic, was, wow, thank you for cheering for us, you know. Because they were going crazy, because they knew that Sid was going to come in there and just kill us.
Yeah.
And finally, whenever Sid came in there, man, and just bumped us around and just pretty much beat our ass, it was just, they loved it. So it was I think, like, it could have been more of a heel type thing, like, if they would have actually ran with it a little bit more than they did. I think it could have been something good.
Yeah, I enjoyed three count. Yeah. I want to get to some questions from the chat room right now. Bubba Mango.
Wow.
Bubble Mango. They got some weird chat names in here.
Wow.
I'm going to skip that one. Let's go to TNA Mark right now. He says, Shannon, I'm from Pennsylvania, and I'm eager to see you wrestling for IWC. What do you like about the independent scene, working on the independent scene?
Working on the independent scene, I just have to say just the freedom. You know, it was nice. Like, you know, last night I worked in Utah. I was in Salt Lake City, Utah last night, and, you know, like, I did, like, a 25-minute match, and just being able to go out there and actually work, you know, as far as, like, psychology goes, it's the first, you know, like, since being in WWE, when I was in WWE, whenever you go out to wrestle a TV match, you got, you know, 6 minutes with music and entrance, and it's so hard to actually work, you know, whenever you got 4 minutes of ring time. You can't, you know, it's just pretty much so fast-paced. It just, it's not, you don't really get a chance to work and just, you know, feel the crowd and just kind of play your character or, you know, just play to the crowd. And that's the main thing, man. Like, I've really enjoyed just going out and doing 20, 25 minutes, you know, or however long it is, and just relax and just have fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been such a good thing, and I've had a blast. Like, you know, last night was so fun. Like, whenever I got back to the locker room, I was so happy because just, you know, how much fun it was. And the reason it was fun was just the fact that I was out there and just, I was, you know, being myself. I was being the Prince of Punk, and, you know, that's something I never got to do in WWE. I never got to have that time.
Right.
You were creating.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like filling the crowd and just, you know, calling it pretty much in the ring, man. Like, it's a blast.
Agent Orange wants to know what your favorite moment was as an MF-er.
As an MF-er? Probably the Royal Rumble. Whenever I was, I guess, me and Matt, we had a couple of spots in the Royal Rumble where, you know, like, he was going to be eliminated, and we did the clown act where I was holding him up with my feet, and
yeah,
I laid on top of him,
was cool,
Jeff was swan-tonning, and it was probably the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that or any road trip with, I guess, me, Matt, and Crash. I guess, you know, we had the MF-er and the moron, so.
Mm. Here's a question from the chat room. Do you know about Matt Hardy's storyline now and why he accepted it?
Do I know about it? Well, I mean, as far as the why he accepted it, I think business is business, and, you know, I guess there was a there was a way to make money off of it. So, you know, business is business, and if you think that something's money, then, yeah, I think you're definitely going to go ahead and go for it. Even though it was kind of personal, I think, you know, it was more of a business money aspect. That's why they went ahead and went with it.
When is your no-compete clause going to be up, and are we going to see you in TNA?
November 1st, that's when it's up, and as far as TNA goes, you know, Dixie Carter and Into Jarrett, if they'll have me as part of their team, and I'd love to be there, and I'd love to be part of the team.
Jesse Amato says, Shannon, I'm a Canadian wrestling fan. Though I thought three count was a really horrible idea, you were an excellent performer. I would like to know who your favorite opponent was ever in your career.
My favorite opponent, there's been several of them, you know, like, there's so many different styles of wrestling. Like, there's, you know, I can't just pinpoint probably one opponent. I mean, you know, I love wrestling Rey Mysterio. I love wrestling Jamie Noble. And, you know, then you get the people like Chris Benoit. Like, I've been in the ring with Chris, and, like, just the intensity of Chris Benoit being in the ring and him is, you know, like, it's like being in the ring with an animal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so many people that I've enjoyed wrestling. I really can't pinpoint one, you know, because there's so many different styles.
You mentioned Jamie Noble earlier. He's kind of he's the kind of guy that runs backstage and really gets himself hyped up before the matches. Do you do anything like that? Do you have a sort of a ritual before your matches?
Yeah, pretty much. I get my own zone, man. I'm not really, I guess, a loud and obnoxious getting pumped up like that. It's just I pretty much just relax and just get my own zone. Mm-hmm. Then once I head out, that's whenever, you know, like it kicks in, you know.
Agent Orange says, what are your thoughts on a three-count reunion in about 10 years or so?
Well, I thought about it, man. I think we'll do it, but this time I think a front man instead of Evan, it's going to be less.
I can still boogie.
Yeah, yeah.
Me, Shane, and Les. What was the UFC guy that...
Tank?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Tank.
Tank. I'm a better dancer than Tank, I guarantee.
Yeah, I think you could take him too, Les.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Tank,
I think you could put him in a stump puller, man.
Tank completed three count. Every boy band needs a groupie, and I thought that was just an ingenious addition to the storyline.
Yeah, Tank, he was the roughest groupie I've ever had.
Oh, yeah. Find another question here. Are you still using your Prince of Punk gimmick now?
Yeah, the Prince of Punk, that's what, you know, I'm still running with or whatever. WWE, I pretty much used my real name, which was Shannon Moore. So, you know, they couldn't copyright my name or nothing like that, so
right.
They don't own that. And, you know, as far as the Prince of Punk goes, that's something that I'm working on right now is, you know, kind of copyright myself or trademarking, you know, because I want to own that because of something. I've got other ideas with stuff, too, as far as, like, you know, these DVD shows and stuff that I've been working on, and that's going to hopefully kick off maybe first of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get that together where, you know, I can own the Prince of Punk. So that's, that's right now, you know, that's mine.
TNA Mark wants to know what your favorite punk music is. What kind of bands do you like?
Probably, there's so many. I mean, I like Blink-182. I mean, there's so many types of music I like. I don't like just punk music. I like everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as far as punk, I probably like, you know, Blink-182, you know, Green Day.
Mm-hmm.
Two that, you know, I listen to a lot.
That's good stuff. I'm a Green Day fan myself.
Yeah.
Which is better, being in a boy band or a punk band?
Being in a boy band, definitely a punk band.
I want to ask you, before we get out of here, about WWE when you were released back in, I think it was June?
July.
July? Did you see that coming? I mean, were you expecting, not expecting, but maybe, you know, had an idea that maybe they wanted to let you go?
Honestly, I didn't really see, as far as the release coming, I didn't see them, you know, actually calling me. You know, I heard there was going to be cuts being made or whatever, but I already had it in my head, man. Like, you know, for the last 2 years, my career had been going at the same pace, and it was great being able to go to the mailbox and have a check every week. But as far as my career goes, like, there was so much more that I was wanting to do as far as, you know, character-wise and just, you know, personality-wise, you know, hadn't been explored yet. And it was coming to the point to where, you know, I would have, you know, probably ended up asking for my release just to go and, you know, pursue other things so I can, because, you know, I want to expand my career. I feel like, you know, I feel like my career's been on hold since, you know, pretty much I've been there or since, you know, me and Matt dropped the whole MF thing. Since we stopped doing that, I've pretty much been doing the same thing. And, you know, in order for me to get to the next level, I think, you know, it's going to either have to, you know, a decision was going to have to be made. Either I was going to have to do something with me or, you know, I needed to go and pursue other options. So, you know, as far as, you know, get my release, you know, like, you know, I'm thankful for the opportunity they gave me, you know, and it was fun being part of WWE, especially I got to be part of two WrestleManias, you know, and I would have probably been part of this past WrestleMania, but I was in a car wreck due to that, so. I was taken out for, you know, the weeks of WrestleMania, and I wasn't able to wrestle. You know, like, I had a good time there, and, you know, like, they treated me good. There's, you know, nothing wrong with that. And as far as them releasing me, there's no hard feelings because I was, you know, like I said, I'm ready to expand a little bit more. And, you know, maybe one day, then, you know, I'll end up back there, and, you know, maybe not. You know, if TNA, if they have me as part of their team or whatever, then, and, you know, the Prince of Punk hits TNA, then maybe I'll be there for a while.
Yeah. Lincoln, one last question. Lincoln wants to know about the towel incident on the Matt show.
The towel? Oh, my God. No, that was just joking, man. That was a few beers and joking. The towel incident.
Okay.
Yeah, y'all don't even want to. This show might. Is there a, I guess, is this a family show?
Yeah, it is,
yeah,
actually.
I might not want to get into the talent, man. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. Les, you know, you know how that goes, man.
Yeah.
It's been a year there. You know how me and Jamie was?
Yes, I know exactly how you are.
Yeah, I ain't even. I'm just going to say sperm, it don't float in the water. It just sticks to your leg.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Shannon Moore here on Wrestling Weekly. You can, Shannon, you're available for bookings, and you can check out the website, guys, at www.upcloseandpersonalbookings.com, and you can book Shannon Moore.
Yeah, you can do that, or you can email me straight to princeofpunk@earthlink.net. You know, that's the way you can get a hold of me, too. So,
well, maybe we'll get a chance to hook up in November if you get booked on that Spindale show.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're up this way, I still got the same home phone. Call me, man. Let's grab lunch. I'd love to see you.
Yeah,
I'd love to see you, too, man. Just sit down and just talk about some old times, man.
Yes, sir. We will have a good time.
Shannon, we loved having you on the show. It's been a great interview, and we got to have you back again soon when you open your school.
Yeah, and I want to take a moment, too, just to thank Les, too, like, as far as just, you know, helping me and stuff the year that I was there. Like, I learned a lot there that year or whatever, and I definitely appreciate, you know, him working with me and as far as letting me be part of HWA. So.
I appreciate your hard work, and I do it all over again. My door is always open to you, my friend. I appreciate everything you've done for me, your credit to the business, and I hope you hook up with TNA and do extremely well.
Cool, thank you.
All right, Shannon Moore here on Wrestling Weekly. Les, you seem to know everybody.
Not everybody.
All of our guests, they've either worked with you or they've heard of you at least.
Or maybe I owe them all money.
Maybe. Well, it's about getting to be about that time. We're going to be cutting out of here.
Who we got next week?
We're going to have to be checking on the website. We'll have you guys check on the website.
I love surprises.
Yes, next week's guest. So keep checking at WrestlingWeekly.com. We'll have next week's guest up there for you. We want to thank, of course, WrestleTalk Radio for their help. If you want to check up on what Les is up to, check it out, LesThatcher.com and EPWT.com. And that's the home of the Elite Pro Wrestling Training.
Exactly.
Good stuff. All right, it's about that time, so we're going to be cutting out of here. We'll see you again next week from 6 to 8 p.m.
Time to grab a bite to eat, Doc. It's been a good one tonight. I enjoyed it. I had some good guests, and we've had a good time.
Yes, absolutely. Next week, we'll see you guys again. So have a good one, and keep watching wrestling, because if you didn't, well...
we'd be out of work.
Exactly.
Bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us again next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern right here on WrestlingWeekly.com.